You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Robert Lee.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as a thrilling come-from-behind victory sees Europe retain the Eurasia Cup presented by DRB HiCom.
Every single one of them stood up and did everything they could, and I'm just very proud of these boys. They worked so hard this week and they worked well together, and as a group we've had a really good time and we wanted to win, and today they did.
That's winning captain Thomas Bjørn, who we'll hear more from shortly. Meanwhile, it was a family affair at the BMW South African Open hosted by the city of Ekurhuleni as Chris Paisley claimed a maiden European Tour title.
She doesn't know that much about golf, but she knows me obviously better than anyone, and times when she kind of was getting a little bit uptight or going a little faster or walking faster, she would just calm me down, and can't say enough about how good she was.
All will be revealed as we look back at the best of the action. Plus, we'll preview the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA, where Rory McIlroy makes a return to competitive action. I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm joined today by two-time European Tour winner Robert Lee. Rob, how are you?
Feels like more, Daniel. Feels like more.
Now then, Eurasia Cup, first of all. Yep. Didn't look good for the Europeans after day one, or after day two to a certain extent, but a brilliant performance in the singles brought home the bacon for Thomas Bjørn's team.
Well, Danish bacon. Do you know what? It was very humid there, and it's always sticky in Malaysia, and I think it would have been a little bit humid for Thomas Bjørn heading into the singles. I don't think he would have believed that he could have gone into the last session behind. Yet the Asians equipped themselves very well and they played some really good stuff. Day one, the putt on the last green on the first day on Friday from Hao Tong Li on the last hole to give them a one-point lead was a fantastic moment. Arjun Atwell, they're all there and they all went ballistic, as they should do, to take that lead into day two. It was terrific.
More on the Eurasia Cup shortly, but we have to mention, Rob, at the top of the show, Chris Paisley's win in South Africa, a first European Tour title, courtesy of a blemish-free Sunday 66.
At a venue that's been very good to the English throughout the last 4 years. You know, he starts off with a one-shot lead. Brandon Grace goes birdie, eagle to the par birdie of Chris Paisley, and now Grace is in front on home soil with the home crowd. You think he's just going to put the foot down and run it all the way at the tape. Not to be, because he made an ugly double on the sixth par three on the front nine. And Chris Paisley never put a foot out of position. He was magnificent. In fact, I would say, if he wins again and again and again, he'll never have an easier win than that, than the way he played. He was completely under control, and it was a really powerful performance.
We are going to catch up with Chris shortly. We're going to kick off, though, with the 2018 Eurasia Cup presented by DRB HiCom, where a dominant display in the final day singles, as we mentioned, saw Europe win the biennial events with a 14-10 victory over Asia at Glenmarie Golf and Country Club in Kuala Lumpur. A solid Sunday doesn't paint the whole picture, though, does it, Rob? Because after day number one, Europe were down, and I sensed that the Asians were up for it more, and maybe there was a little bit of complacency about the Europeans heading into the first day's play.
No, not a chance. Thomas Bjørn would have them revved up. He would not have them feeling like they were entitled to win. Hao Tong Li made a magnificent birdie putt on the last green, the last match out there on day one, to give the Asians a 3.5, 2.5 lead. And that was a fantastic result in four ball, better ball. A brilliant result for Team Asia. Arjun Atwell was keyed up, so were his men, and they halved the foursome session on day two, so they still had that one-point advantage. Obviously, world rankings-wise, the Europeans were much stronger, but it all depends at the start. If the Asians could get one, two, or three wins straight off the bat, they could start to make the Europeans panic and crumble down the order. It didn't happen. Four out of the first five went to Europe, and that really set the scene for the day.
What did you make of the pairings on the first day? We saw Tommy Fleetwood's and Paul Casey play together. They got the better of Benny Ann and Kiradek Appibarnrat. Is that a duo that you would expect to see maybe for the Ryder Cup? Were you happy the way that the first day pairings were put up by Thomas Bjørn?
Well, here's the thing. If they both make the Ryder Cup side, would Thomas Bjørn play them in the fourballs after playing very well in the first match and seemed to be getting on well? Why not? Why wouldn't you play Fleetwood with Casey? So that may be that may be a little sign that perhaps they could be a four-ball pairing when they get to France. Again, a lot of golf to be played if they both make the side.
I know I'm hammering this point, but when it comes to the Asian team, no one really would have expected on day one Henrik Stenson and Alexander Lavie to be defeated by Sung Hoon Kang and Poom Saksan Sin. These are two Asian players that we don't know an awful lot about, but they played brilliantly, didn't they? I
think beat them easily.
Eight birdies in the end, something in the first nine holes. Yeah. They were tremendous. Talk about complacency. It's just when you've won this event easily in the past, surely there's something in the back of your mind, Rob. As an ex-player, you will know sometimes if you're just that 1% off because you expect to just come and win. You talked about world rankings. Is that fair, or are you just saying, no, that just doesn't happen? You get in the zone and you go out there and you play as you always would do.
I don't think Henrik Stenson's quite back up to his full running speed yet. I think he's had, before Christmas, he had injury problems, so he's trying to get back to playing the golf that he knows he can play. But they are, him and Alex Levy, prolific birdie makers, and in the four-ball format, you would have thought that would have been a very good partnership. But, you know, doesn't matter where you go in the world, it's like international football. There are no bad international football teams now. The Asian players are very good indeed, and they thoroughly deserved the win. They were terrific. Kang and Saksansin, they were brilliant.
On to day two. Were you surprised that Thomas Bjorn split up some of the pairings? We talked about Fleetwood and Casey, but on day two it was Stenson and Fleetwood, and Paul Casey played with Tyrrell Hatton. Tyrrell Hatton had a fantastic result on day one with Ross Fisher. They were split up. Could you see why Thomas Bjorn was mixing and matching? Do you think it was predetermined? Do you think he should have done things differently?
I think from the fact that he split up is only two winning pairings on the first day and the second day, tells me that he had his foursomes partnerships already worked out.
Right thing to do?
And that, who knows? It's subjective, isn't it? You know, he got a half in the second session in the foursomes. If he hadn't have done what he did, he might have lost or he might have won. You don't know. But I always think there's a certain amount of roll with the punches in when you look at Ryder Cups and how they evolve. Sometimes partnerships come out of nowhere, not expected at the start of the week, and then all of a sudden you have a bad session. But the one pairing stands out there, sticks out there like a tractor beam, and you keep them together. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. On a given day, it can work in your favour and you look like a hero and you get it all wrong and everyone says, you should have done this. I think as a captain, it's very difficult because it almost, whatever you do, you're damned. It was obvious if you get it right and you made a complete mess of it if you get it wrong.
We keep framing this as you know, pre-Ryder Cup, and is he doing this because he's looking at Ryder Cup pairings or because he wants to change things? I mean, has he played the tournament here or has he played the future?
He's played the captain's. He's played the captain's mindset here that he will take a lot of into the Ryder Cup. Now, he's probably going to look at half of this team won't make the Ryder Cup side.
Sure, but potentially the way that he's done the pairings, he's thought, right, I'm going to predetermine these pairings I'm going to roll with the punches with others.
For instance, I'll give Fleetwood and Casey a go in the four balls and let's see how they get on. They could both make the Ryder Cup side, and if they do, after this showing, I might give them a run. Ross Fisher and Tyrrell Hatton, if they both make it, they play very well in the four ball, they might get a go. Who knows? And then you put in the ones that didn't play, the Molinaris and the Garcias and the Rory McIlroys, a whole bunch of players that didn't play this week. The dynamic of the team becomes different again.
Bottom line was, Europe were under a little bit of pressure going into the Sunday singles, do you think, simply because they were behind or because they were in touching distance?
No.
Do you think
the fear of losing for Europe.
Yeah.
It was the fear of coming away and getting beaten by the Asian team when they are by far and away in the world rankings. Much better.
Only a point in it, 6.5, 5.5 going into the final day. It's not as if it was
deficit. With 12 results to come, it's not an awful lot. But as I say, the Asian players would have felt very good about their first 2 days' work. And had they got off to a quick start results-wise in the singles, then they could send a shudder down the rest. That's how it works. You get off to a great start and you empower the rest of your team. But if you get off to a shaky start and some of your big names lose, it works the other way.
Arjun Atwal obviously captained Asia. I believe he was, I don't want to say getting advice from Tiger Woods, but there was text conversations.
Well,
text conversations between the pair. Because you talk about the lineup singles and every single Ryder Cup, we always talk about, you know, do you top load it? Do you get your best players out first or last or middle or however you want to try and make up your singles?
Well, it was interesting in the foursomes, in the foursomes, he didn't change one pairing. And Thomas did the tinkering. I'm just saying, it turned out 3-all. You just never know, do you?
But Arjun puts out Fung first, Saxansin second, Chaurasia third, Tanihara fourth, and suddenly the big European guns are coming in, and we win, I say we win seven of the first eight.
You know, it was, we were expected to do that. You know, had our players not dominated the singles, I think the European team would have come back, and you would have heard all the, you know, all the wise heads would be going on about, oh, wait till they play the Americans and the rest of it. So that's the pressure that the European team were under. They had to come away with the result just to keep the naysayers quiet.
Thomas Peters.
And they did.
Thomas Peters with the winning pot. How pleased are you for him, given that he's had an indifferent 12 months? Is that fair?
Thomas is, he's enigmatic. He is, with his best game, a world number one. He's that good. He's a magnificent player, Thomas Peters. And we saw how much a player for the big stage he is when he played the last Ryder Cup. In America, 4 points after losing the first day, the first session, he won 4 points after that, his singles and three foursomes and four balls with Rory McIlroy. He is a fantastic player, Thomas Peters, and I have him down, even despite a period of play that he probably wouldn't want to remember too much. I've got him down for making this next team.
So singles wins for the likes of Fleetwood, Stenson, Cabrera, Bayo, Wiesberger, Levy, Peters, as we mentioned, and Hatton late on. There were some good wins after the event was won for the Asian side, including Ikeda, who got the better of Ross Fisher, and Paul Dunn was beaten by Lee 3-1. They were the last singles out. Time to hear from the winning captain, Europe's Thomas Bjorn.
The whole team came out today, and there was maybe a bit of change in atmosphere in that team room yesterday. There was a lot of determination and a lot of willing to go out and win a point, and, you know, most of them did that today. So I'm very proud of them. Very great team, great morale. They knew that it was, they had to keep going to the end. They knew they were up against something that there was a special atmosphere in that Asian team, and they knew they had to work hard. And today I can only say that every single one of them stood up and was did everything they could, and I'm just very proud of these boys. They worked so hard this week, and they worked well together, and as a group we've had a really good time, and we wanted to win. We didn't want to travel this far at this time of the year not to win, so we wanted to come out here and show that, you know, European golf is more than 12 strong. You know, we're all the way through, and a lot of these guys deserve their points today. They worked hard this week and might not have gotten too much out of it, and today they did.
How much do you think you've learnt from this event to the Ryder Cup?
A lot. I learned a lot about players. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about how we do things together. And obviously people will look at there's players that are not here, and very strong players that are not here, that most likely will come into the fold going forward. But you know, this group of players, they can all 12 be there, and I've had a really good experience with them this week, and that will stand us well when we go out in the future. But right now we're just very delighted to have won this.
Sounds like he's emphasising an awful lot of what went on off the fairways. He talks about learning about the players, not about the players' game. He talks about learning about the captaincy and what it is like in the locker room, because that's the unique nature of these team events. He'll know about how they play and what their strengths and weaknesses are, but it's that team element to it and how he copes with players off the course that is obviously very, very important.
Yeah, of course. Knowledge is everything. The fact they've spent that time together pretty much non-stop without, you know, the usual distractions in 72-hole stroke play that you get every week. Yes, I'm at the same tournament as you, but I might not be spending time in your pocket. When you get together with a team and you're together the whole time, that sort of relationship between you all is very important. And Thomas has learned a lot about the players, and of course a lot about man management, which he's got to get absolutely right when he gets to France.
Awful lot of goodwill in the team, of course, towards Tommy Fleetwood after what he did last year. Race 2 Dubai winner, finished the season almost out of petrol, but he seemingly has come back refreshed here. 3 wins from 3. You cannot ask for any more, can you?
No, you know, always with Tommy Fleetwood, when he comes to an event this week that he's defending, you know, almost with Tommy Fleetwood, you sort of, you know, he played really well last year. He was the best player in Europe. We turn the new year into 2018, and you think, is he going to keep it going? Is Tommy Fleetwood going to keep that graph going in the right direction? And I do believe he is. I think he's very fixed and focused on what he wants to do. And I think by showing here, his game's in pretty good shape. And he's very aware that all the money and the points and the adulation that he won last year, a lot of it was pre the start of the Ryder Cup qualifying process. So he has work to do. It's not like he can sort of rest on his laurels and cruise into the team because he's done all the work. Essentially, what he's done last year counts for nothing. He's got to go hard from right now. And I think that's what I do believe that's what he's going to do.
Tommy on Twitter said, such a great feeling winning with the team today. Get in the Europe. Thomas Bjorn, inspiring and a brilliant captain. Thank you and a pleasure to be part of it. Tyrrell Hatton, 3 wins from 3 as well, alongside Tommy, top scoring for Europe. These are two players that had brilliant years, as we know, Tyrrell as well. And it comes across like this event wasn't a chore for them.
Well, Tyrrell Hatton, of course, won the Rolex Italian. He's already got a lot of Ryder Cup points in the bag, and I think he's a shoo-in for the side. I can't wait to see Tyrrell Hatton play Ryder Cup, by the way. Can't wait to see him play Ryder Cup, and possibly Patrick Reed in the singles, or maybe Rory wants Patrick in revenge, and maybe a bit of Pat Perez and Tyrrell Hatton. That would really, really stoke it up. But yeah, Hatton has been fantastic. He's one of my favourite players out there to watch.
And we can hear from the Englishman who says he was delighted with his performance.
Yeah, obviously it's been an amazing experience for me. Obviously it's my first time in a team event as a pro. And, you know, I've loved the week. It's been great with the team, and, you know, we've had good fun in the team room as well. You know, we needed a big day today, and the lads have gone out there and done a job, which is fantastic. We had a good chat last night in the team room, and I think that got the boys fired up and, you know, wanting to go out there today and sort of do a job. And I think, you know, we've managed to do that, and, you know, to win the trophy is what we're here to do. And so it's been a great week.
So that was Tyrrell Hatton. Give us your thoughts on Henrik Stenson, Rob, because 2 points for the Swede. Did win on the PGA Tour last year, didn't win on the European Tour. You suggested that he's not been firing on all cylinders over the last 12 months, so a little bit of form for Henrik.
Yeah, I think Henrik he works very hard on his game and his swing, and I think when he feels it's all in place, he's a force, he's a world force, Henrik Stenson. And when he feels it's not quite there, he's always trying to figure it out. So he's a guy with immense talent and strength and power, and he's got all the attributes, a massive heart to play golf at the very highest level, which he does. So hopefully his injury niggles are behind him now, and he can crack on and have a full 2018 ahead of him.
Now, Rob, the wildcard selections were Paul Casey and Alex Levee. Casey, first of all, how do you think he did?
Did well, a couple of points, and I think, like I said, I think more value than the actual amount of points that he accrued is the fact that he was in there amongst the team and back in the fold and back part of a European entity, which he will be. I'm convinced he's going to be in the side when we get to France.
How much does Thomas Bjorn want a Frenchman in the side, and is Alex Levee the man to be in the team?
Alex Levee is a brilliant player. He's one of my favourite players to watch out there. He is you know, the way Brandon Grace plays, that is the way Alex Levee plays. It's grip it and rip it and show me the flag and I'll hit one at it. That's marvellous for me to watch. And when I see a lot of golf on telly, he's terrific. If he has a really good season, he can make the Ryder Cup side. Yes, everybody would love a Frenchman to be at Le Golf National. It could be Victor Dubuisson. But I'll tell you another Frenchman that most people don't know that much about, but I've watched him quite a bit, and a tremendous ball striker, and he played well last week without really holding a putt, and that's Adrien Sadier. And if someone was going to make a run for the side who's French from outside the perhaps fancied ones, it could be him.
Inevitably, given the scoreline and given the fact that Asia played well on days 1 and 2, there were some below-par performances. Paul Don didn't pick up a point. Alex Norén and Ross Fisher, only a point apiece.
You know, when you look at the final points total, there's going to be guys that won loads of points and guys that didn't win loads of points. In the end, you may have contributed more than your points total by how you were in the team room, how you got on with your mates, how you inspired people. So there's lots of bits and pieces in the ingredients mix before you make the souffle.
Who caught the eye from the Asian team?
There's the young kid, Kung Wok Mai. A lot of people are talking very good things about him. And he got beaten by Wiesberger in the singles, but I definitely think he's one to watch out for. Afib Barnrat has proved that he can play on European soil away from the sort of Asian conditions, week in, week out. He's still a marvellous player to watch. Very natural, and he's got a lovely way about him.
How good is this event? What sort of future has it got? A lot closer this time around because the previous renewal saw the Europeans win easy. It's got to be close to keep interest alive, hasn't it?
I should have mentioned Hao Tongli as well. Terrific talent. Young Chinese player, and he's got 6.5 billion people on his Twitter account. Yeah, what was your question?
My question was, what sort of future has this event got? Because it was easy for the Europeans time before the one that we've just had. It's got to be competitive to keep the interest alive, hasn't it?
Yeah, but look, you know, Asia is still an emerging block. It is.
They were up for this, weren't they? They were up for it.
Without a question. I think this event's got a great future. I think with time, the Asian players are going to get stronger and stronger and stronger. We're where we are, and they're going to get closer to us. There is no doubt about that. There'll be more South Korean players and Chinese players. We're going to get more Chinese players as well. So it is going to get closer and closer. I think this has got a great future. Absolutely have. I'm bang up for it.
So that was the Eurasia Cup presented by DRB HiCom. Next to the BMW South African Open, hosted by the city of Ekurhuleni, and a maiden European Tour victory for Chris Paisley after the Englishman shot a final round 6 under par 66 to finish on 21 under par, 3 clear of Brandon Grace at the Glendower Golf Club. And I'm delighted to say that the man himself joins us on the Race to Dubai show now. Chris, your first win at your 118th attempt, it must feel pretty special.
Yeah, obviously it's just amazing. I mean, obviously it's the moment that I've worked for my whole life, and I was kind of getting to the point where I was starting to feel like a bit of a journeyman. You know, I was I've been struggling to keep my card in previous years, and come close a couple of times, and even though I knew I could do it, you know, you never quite know until you actually do it. And to not just win, but to win in that manner yesterday is just it's an unbelievable feeling.
What were you feeling like, Chris, when obviously it's nice to get off to a good start? And you did. You went under the first two holes, but Brandon started with a birdie and an eagle. What were your thoughts standing on the third?
I just kind of laughed, to be honest, when he knocked his eagle put in on the second. Just looked at Kerry, my wife, and just kind of shrugged my shoulders. And it actually didn't kind of faze me too much, you know, because that was a nice thing. I did get off to a decent start myself, so I was kind of doing what I needed to do, and I suppose I wasn't in control of what Brandon was going to do. If he went out and shot 60, then so be it. But I was feeling really confident with how I was playing, and I knew there was still 16 holes left, and I suppose I was hoping that he didn't keep it in shots like he did on the second hole there.
Yeah, so kept level-headed after Brandon's really good start, and I guess likewise when he double bogeys the six, because that for him was a turning point, a wrong turning point, but for you, obviously, it propelled you right back in it and up into top spot, and from there on in, it was pretty much plain sailing. What were your thoughts when you saw Brandon make that mistake on the par 3-6?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when he missed it right into that trap, yeah, I knew probably wasn't going to make par. Obviously, I wasn't expecting him to make double bogey. I suppose that was obviously a bit of a bonus, and then it was that kind of stretch that I suppose kind of won it for me. You know, I had a really good drive down the next hole and made birdie, and I kind of pulled away around the middle of the turn there, and it went from, you know, feeling like a bit of a battle to then all of a sudden I was ahead, and you know, my instinct was wanting to almost protect the lead, but I knew that wasn't the right thing to do. You know, I had to keep pushing on and try and keep making birdies, because I knew, you know, even though he'd had that setback, I knew with how good a player he was gonna make a bit of a charge. So yeah, just try to kind of stay in my own little world and just keep hitting really good shots, and it was just, you know, crazy how kind of well I managed to do that.
How enjoyable must it have been for you, Chris, to just have a swish with a club from the tee, look up, and it was just sailing straight down the middle? I mean, not a few times, every single time.
It's ridiculous. I was actually like surprised myself, to be honest, every time I did it, because my driving's actually been the kind of thing that's probably held me back the last few years. You know, I'm not a short hitter, but I'm not the longest, but I've also not been particularly accurate, and it's probably cost me a few tournaments, you know, in the last few years. And to, you know, I did a lot of work over the winter and got a new driver in the bag, and it was just it was bizarre, to be honest. It was a wonderful feeling. Just I just felt like I was, you know, picking my target out and just lashing it, and it just kept coming out straight and going a long way. It was just quite a surreal feeling for me, you know.
Ernie Els was very complimentary on Twitter, said, congrats, Chris Paisley. Great last round, bogey-free 66, and a well-deserved first European Tour win. It must be nice to hear kind words and thoughts from players such as Ernie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to hear legends like Ernie talk that way about my performance is just amazing. I suppose compliments from people like that kind of carry more weight than compliments from my family or whatever. He doesn't have to say stuff like that. And he's seen everything there is to see on a golf course. So for him to kind of take the time to say something like that is just really special. And I've had a lot of comments from other pros and peers and stuff, and it's really nice to get that kind of those tweets and comments and texts and all that recognition. It's amazing.
I tell you what, the whole last round was like a showreel. You played like Ben Hogan. But what was your favourite shot the entire week? Now, I'll tell you what my favourite shot of yours was, but you go first.
I'd say the key to when I knew I kind of won it was maybe the putt on 15. It was only about, I think about 6 or 8 feet or something, but it was a really tough putt. It was really quick and just kind of had to start on the right edge and sort of drop in. And Branham was pretty much already in for birdie. I knew if I could just knock that in, it would, just keep me that shot, extra shot ahead to give me that enough comfort zone to finish it off. And to hold that one, that was kind of a big sigh of relief.
I was doing the golf at Sky in the studios with James Heath, and we were obviously pulling for you because, to break through for the first time against Brandon Grace in the final round, a lot of pressure. You did it in brilliant style. But the shot that we both, and we talked about it, both agreed for us was the shot of the week. And you might even have missed it. I don't know. It was like a fat chip and run you played out the 17th Saturday. You played a fat chip and run out the bunker to a tough pin at the top of a ridge. We were both absolutely blown away with that. A very unusual shot.
Yeah, it's a shot that actually my coach, Andrew Nixon, showed me a few years ago. Kind of a really square face, path very square. Yeah, it's just a brilliant shot. If you've got a lot of green like that to work with, I hit a pitching wedge. And it turned the shot into what I felt was actually quite easy. Like, all I was trying to do was just, square face pitching wedge, just, carry it maybe 5 yards, and then I just knew it would run down there pretty close. Whereas, if I tried to play that with a low wedge or a sound wedge and carry it, a few yards short of the pin or whatever, like a lot of people would have done, it would have been, no margin for error. But I was actually over that shot thinking that it wasn't that difficult. And you don't see many guys playing it like that, but it's been a really useful shot for me over the years.
So you're getting help, obviously, when it comes to the coaching, and it's working out for you. And something else that's also working out for you off the course, on the course, so to speak, is Kerry, because she was on the bag, wasn't she, this week?
She was, yeah. So I wasn't originally going to play the tournament. So I told my regular caddy, Sean Russell, that I said, I'm not going to play SA Open. We'll just go straight to Abu Dhabi and start 2018 there. So he booked the holiday down in Chamonix in the Alps. And then I changed my mind and I just said to Sean, go on your holiday and I'll just get a log or get Kerry on the bag. And decided to get Kerry on the bag. And it's funny, as soon as we made that decision, he said, because I said, we'll go to SA and we'll kind of treat it as a bit of a warm-up event for the desert, because you don't want to go into the desert swing too rusty. And he's like, no, it's not going to be a warm-up event. We're going to go and win. If I'm going to caddy, we're going to try and win this thing. And she was adamant that we were, we're going to go and give it a good crack and do well and win. And yeah, she was right. So as the wife always knows best.
How did she help over the course of the 4 days? What are the different things that she might bring that maybe your regular caddy doesn't?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a bit awkward if Sean kind of gave me a bit of a hug or a kiss after I made a birdie at the end of the hole. She was amazing. She obviously doesn't know. She couldn't help me with the yardages and what club to hit or what shot to hit, but she knows me better than anyone. So there's a few times, obviously, so I was under a lot of pressure. I was getting a little bit quick. I was maybe walking a bit faster. Maybe my pre-shot routine sped up a little bit, and she could really sense that. So there's a lot of times, especially over the weekend, that she just kind of stopped me and gave me a drink of water and just kind of told me to chill out a little bit. And you obviously can't put a kind of, a figure or whatever on how important those little moments were, but it was just huge, and I felt so comfortable and so calm the whole week. And you know, she played a huge part in it. We just had a good time as well. We just went out trying to enjoy it, and we did.
Well, it just shows you how useless and overpaid caddies are.
I know. Yeah, she doesn't know what all the fuss is about.
Has she got the job full time?
No, I think she said she wants to, you know, retire on a victory.
One and done.
Yeah, absolutely. No worry about that. Yeah. Abu Dhabi, of course, this week. What are your thoughts going to play in the desert, Chris?
Yeah, can't wait. Obviously, the desert tournament, one of the highlights of the year. Great tournament, and I suppose it's going to be a bit of a strange one. You know, I've obviously never gone to a tournament the week after winning. So I'm sure it'll be a few more distractions. You know, normally I kind of go about my business quite quietly, but I'm sure I'll have a few more obligations and obviously catch up with a few of the guys and get a few, you know, handshakes and all that stuff, which would be great. So that's the kind of the negative side, but you know, there'll be more distractions and stuff for me this week. But obviously, it's just a huge boost of confidence, and I want to do that again. You know, that kind of feeling of winning, it's just amazing. And you know, if I can just go and keep playing like I've been, then I'd love to have that feeling again in the next few weeks.
Well, hopefully it'll be a welcome distraction, because you've thoroughly deserved it. Many thanks for popping on the Race to Dubai show, Chris. We wish you well for this week and indeed for the future. Thanks for coming on, pal.
Pleasure. Thank you very much, guys.
We mentioned right at the top there, win number one, start number 118, and he was suggesting...
That's like 118, isn't it?
It is a bit. He was suggesting, I didn't want to become a journeyman. Well, he's not now, because he's won on tour. It is deserved. He went close a couple of times, didn't he, last
year? He won on the Challenge Tour.
Yeah,
you know, that
made
was 6 years ago.
Made in Denmark, he came close. I think it was
but winning's
three,
winning.
But, yeah.
Winning's winning, and he's learned a lot about himself. And I'll tell you what...
Cool under pressure. I mean, Brandon Grace, massive home favourite. You know, you were working the event. I mean, all the support, all the galleries are for Brandon.
I mean, Brandon is he's another guy, like Tyrrell Hatton, the Alex Levy, grip it and rip it guy. You know, he really doesn't procrastinate. He makes his
doesn't
mind up.
Back
bam,
off. Yeah.
That's what he does. And he has a go every time. And the reason he took five at the par three on the front nine was that he tried to play a shot that was a 1 in 50 shot. That's why, you know, if he could just blobbed it out and two putted for his bogey, he could have made four all day long. But he tried to hit the 1 in 50 shot. He's a gambler. That's what he does. But those risk and reward guys, they make you want to watch them. And I'll tell you what, Chris Paisley's performance in that last round was a template for how to win from the front. Because he never backed off. He just he kept to his game plan, but with aggression. He stayed where he was in his position, but he was having a go at the course all the time. He never got to that point that you see some players do, and they start to shrink a little bit. They back off a little bit. He just kept going and going and going, and it was, in the end, an easy 66. It was superb.
Well, Paisley's win meant that Brandon Grace's attempt at becoming only the second ever player to win South Africa's three most prestigious events ultimately came up short.
Yeah, like I said, the guy who's going to win today is the guy who played the best. You know, he certainly played the best golf today. He was flawless from the start to the end. You know, a couple of iffy things on the first hole, but, you know, managed to make a great up and down. And, you know, sometimes you get that up and down, keeps your round going. Sometimes it can really rattle you. But he played flawless golf, I must say. He was really great under the pressure. And every time I threw something at him, you know, he responded. So it was good. But for me, obviously, you know, not the result I wanted. But I'll still take a second with my first week back.
Started the season well, hasn't he, Brandon Grace? One to watch out for the majors, potentially, Rob?
Without a question. Not only has he got big-time mentality, he's got a great golf game as well, Brandon Grace. When you see modern players, you would describe Brandon as a field player. That's the way he plays. Very natural-looking golfer. And I've got to say, with that flattish ball flight that he's got, it's not low, but it's flattish, it lends itself to make you think he could be an Open champion.
Top 10 from the BMW South African Open, hosted by the city of Ekurhuleni, reads like this, Rob.
It reads like the piece of paper that I've lost, but just give me a second and I'll find it. I've got 150
pieces of paper. See, I gave you a long intro. I gave you a long intro to try and find it.
Sorry, I'm ready.
A long intro.
Sorry, I'm ready.
You eventually got there.
Chris Paisley leading the way. Yes, 166,000 Race to Dubai points. Thank you very much. 21 under par, 66, 65, 70. and a flawless 66 in the final round. Thoroughly deserved. Brandon Grace, as you just found out, was second. JC Ritchie from South Africa, his best week ever. He was third. Jacques Blau was fourth, tied alongside fellow South African Jacques Kruijswijk, who looks like a very exciting player, and he's got his card in the European Tour. We'll be seeing more of him. And Scott Vincent from Zimbabwe. Tied for seventh, it was Darren Fickart, Chase Kepka, Renato Paratori, and the Frenchman I was talking about, Adrien Sadier.
That's the top 10. Our predictions last week, we managed to get one top 10 between us. That was Brandon Grace. It surprised me a little bit that you said you were rooting for Chris because Brandon Grace was your main pick on the show. But I like the fact that you were rooting for the Englishman in the event itself.
Well, you don't think I'd have rooted for Chris when he had the one-shot lead, looking for the breakthrough moment in his European Tour career?
I know, but
you don't think I'd have pulled for him?
Listen, I know how important this prediction game is to you over the course of the years. I know how seriously you take it.
Yeah, but I'm in the wrong seat, you see. I don't want you to win points because that'll be me.
It's like an own goal. It's like an own goal.
Yeah.
You went for Brandon Grace, who was second, gets you 10 points. You also went for Thomas Detry, who missed the cut.
Yes, he did.
So that's minus five. So that means you're on five, or at least the guest seat is on five.
Okay.
The presenter seat is on 10 because I went for Dylan Fratelli and Sean Norris, who both were tied 20th, which picks me 5 points up apiece. It's 20 for a winner, 10 for a top five, five for a top 20, and minus five for a missed cut. And one pick has to be from outside.
So I finished second. Second and get 5 points less than you.
Correct.
That works. That's
because it's all about consistency.
That works.
Listen.
Mediocrity. Did you say mediocrity?
No, consistency. One pick has to be from outside of the top 50 in the final 2017 RTD standings. Got there eventually. And that makes it difficult. That does make it difficult. We'll get to our selections shortly. Now, our Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game kicked off last week, of course. It is congratulations to listener Eddie Whitefield, who scored the most points in our Presenters and Listeners League last week. How did you get on? Do you know?
I was told
you don't know, do you?
I just don't know. How come I'm just going to make up and invent over 250,000 points then?
You got 253,000, just over. Well done.
Do you think I knew?
You're in 18th, I'm in 20th. I got 245,000. So we're close there. I like this show.
Week one.
Exactly.
I wouldn't have too much hubris if I were you.
No, I know. We have got our own league, obviously, so if you want to get involved, you can do. Go to europeantour.com/myeuropeantour. Pick your fantasy team, then under the private league tab, enter this pin. Are you ready? Remind you, you're in, so you don't need it. Are you ready, everybody? It is lowercase v, W, uppercase R, lowercase JGR, uppercase JN, lowercase Y. We need the top 10 in the race to Dubai, Rob.
The top 10 in the race to Dubai is like this. That is the 2017 top 10. This is the brand new, up-to-date 2018 top 10. And we start with Wade Ormsby from Australia after a couple of events played, 357,000 points. Dylan Fratelli in second spot. Sharma Shubhankar, the Indian player, who's been superb, actually, in the last month or so. He's third. Cameron Smith is fourth. Chris Paisley, fifth. Up into fifth after his win in South Africa. Paul Peterson, sixth. Eric Van Rooyen, seventh. Julian Suri, Alexander Bjork, Rafa Cabrera-Bayer, all tied for eighth.
On to this week's event now, and what a week it should be at the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA at Abu Dhabi Golf Club in the UAE. Fresh from Eurasia Cup victory, Tommy Fleetwood returns to defend the title that laid the foundations for his rather successful 2017. He was brilliant last year, wasn't he? He got the better of Dustin Johnson down the stretch.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we know that Tommy Fleetwood had a marvellous year, didn't he? And it culminated in him being crowned the winner of the race to Dubai. So he's got all that confidence. You talk about players, and I hate the phrase, moving up to the next level, whatever that means, but he is continuing to improve, and that's the key thing with Tommy.
What's the course like this week? Long?
Yeah, yes, it's not a short golf course, not by any means. I can remember when sometimes you get here and the rough is really thick, horrific. Sometimes you get here and it's playable. One year when it was horrific, Martin Kaymer shot level 66s around this place, which is a joke. But when it becomes more lenient, you can see some low scores. It's amazing how difficult the golf course is and how well the boys play it. They really are impressive. It's not a short golf course.
So it can change from year to year, and literally you can rock up and it can be very different to what it was 12 months previously?
There are some years it's had killer rough. You miss the fairway, you miss the first cut, and you get into the sort of 5-6 inch high, lush green, horrible stuff. It's hard to gouge it and find a putting surface because the green speeds are normally pretty good. The greens are normally pure here in Abu Dhabi. So I think it's a really good golf course. I like watching it. Risk and reward all the way around.
Because recently we've had some winners that you wouldn't have tipped at the start. The likes of Gary Stahl has won, Jamie Donaldson, Robert Rock has won here as well. It's not one that necessarily you can predict with any ease.
I think that's every single week on the European Tour is very difficult to predict. And you've only got to look at your back catalogue of predictions to find that is actually true.
Mm.
Yeah. It's a really good golf course, it is. So, it's actually a great golf course if you get a complete mixture of winners.
But the reason I mentioned those players because they were outsiders heading into it, if you delve further back into the archive of this event, maybe it was more predictable. You
mentioned the Kymers and the McIlroys.
Martin Kymer won it, three times and everything, and should have won it another time. Paul Casey's won it twice. You know, these were players at the top of their game at the time where you thought, yeah, they obviously love playing in the desert. They love this course.
Has Rory won this, or I just see him in my head?
Rory has never won it, but he's come second on umpteen occasions.
Yeah, he looks like, in my head, in my back catalogue, that he's won it, but he's obviously just been stood in the last green and not been the guy that's lifted it.
Do you want to know his form figures, his complete form figures?
I do.
Are you ready?
Yes.
At this particular event?
Yes, I do.
11th, 5th, 3rd, 2nd, 2nd, miscut, 2nd, 2nd, 3rd. Didn't play last year. And speaking of Rory playing, it's just great to see him back. Rib injury completely banished. What about this heartbeat situation?
Well,
is that something or nothing?
It's obviously a thing because he mentioned it. Some sort of a virus that he caught, and it affected a bit of scarring on one of the ventricles. And there's a bit of a thing. I believe it's not life-threatening or anything like that. He just needs to keep himself fit, which he does anyway. So I don't think lifestyle-wise it's going to change what Rory does. So hopefully it's just one of those things that you live with and it doesn't hamper his efforts in any way. So great to see Rory back. I know he's been practicing and I know he wants to hit the ground running. He doesn't want a two-month warm-up period.
This is not a pipe opener.
He wants to come here and play well straight away. And he has done that before. You know, come back from a break, bang, straight away, play well.
What's your expectations of Rory for 2018? I mean, his own. To win majors.
Nothing much. Win the Masters. Nothing much. He's my pick for the Masters this year again, because he's such a natural for it, and it's gonna happen for him at some point. If he doesn't stress about it and birdies the par fives, he can give him the green jacket now.
Dustin Johnson's probably going to win a Masters as well, isn't he?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, certainly. You know, all the bits and pieces are there for Dustin.
Second this year. He's already won this year.
Dustin Johnson.
Can he win again this week?
Dustin Johnson.
Of course he can.
Absolutely. He's the world number one. He's the best player in the world. So he's the one that the Rorys and the Jason Days and the Jordan Spieths and Justin Thomases and the John Rahms and the Sergios, he's the guy they're all shooting at.
What has Justin Rose got to prove this week? Missed out on the Race to Dubai title last year. On the Masters title last year.
Justin Rose is a fantastic golfer and he put in a sterling finish. He had to really go hell for leather to try and close the gap on Tommy Fleetwood. And it looked like, as he got into the back nine in the final tournament, he was going to do it. And people would have said 6 weeks, 5 weeks before that, it was undoable. Justin Rose very nearly did it. He's a brilliant player. And I think, despite perhaps not closing out the Race to Dubai or not beating Sergio Augusta, there's a lot of stuff in there that he can take into this year and have a fantastic, phenomenal season.
It is a great field this week. We've talked about Paul Casey already, played the Eurasia Cup. He's a dual winner of this event. Matt Kuchar's come over from the PGA Tour. Tyrrell Hatton is playing as well. We know Tommy Fleetwood's playing. This is a significant event, isn't it now? It always was, but with the likes of DJ coming over and Rory playing as well, this is a stellar lineup.
Let me just go through. We got categories when we look at a field. I'll just run you quickly through the first category before we get to the rest. It runs I'll just do surnames. You know who they are. Johnson, Rose, Stenson, McElroy, Casey, Kuchar, Hatton, Fleetwood, Cabrera, Bayo, Fitzpatrick, Grace, Fisher, Peters, Wiesberger, Afi Barnrat, Fratelli, Poulter, Haotong Lee. That's just the first category. It's a brilliant tournament.
Yeah, we've got to pick some players.
We have. One outside the top 50 from last year.
Yeah, one of the ones outside of the names you just mentioned.
Well, I'll let you go first.
I'm going to go for Justin Rose.
Okay.
He won the Indonesian Masters late last year. I know this is nothing like the standard this week, but I just think he might just have a little bit of a point to prove, and he's got a good record.
Yeah, but how many birdies did he make at the end of the year? Incredible total.
He was... Well, what did he win? Has he won three of his last five events, something like that?
He had like 10 top 10s in a row or something.
It's just phenomenal
play. Yeah, his consistency and top with that, a mixture of very low scoring.
So he's a
proper competitor.
He's my main pick. Who's your main pick?
I'm going to come back to that because I still haven't decided.
Okay, who's your outside
pick?
My outside
pick is Nacho Elvira is my outside pick.
Oh, was he outside the top 50?
Yes.
Have you checked that?
I have.
Okay. Why are you
look slightly worried about that, didn't you? Oh, you do look worried. I like it.
Why are you picking Nacho?
Because...
I've tipped him on this show previously, by the way.
I watched him make a few swings last week, and, he looked good. It didn't all run his way, but he top-20'd, and I've watched him on the range.
Okay.
I go down the range sometimes and just keep myself to myself, just have a little gawp and check it out.
Yeah.
He's good.
Incognito. Mac on.
He's good. He's good.
Cap down.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Okay, so Nacho Elvira for you. I'm going to go for Jorge Campillo as mine.
Oh, double Spanish.
Yeah.
How about that?
How about that? Top 20 last week. Good numbers, if not spectacular numbers at Abu Dhabi. And we've got to pick outsiders here. So Campillo and Rose. So your main selection as you scramble for all of the names that you rattled through before because you've forgotten half of them.
Well, I mean, I said top 20. Bang on was Nacho Elvira last week. But I was looking for your suspect top 20 to see if I could find... Oh, yes, just outside the top 10. Very good. You don't mess about. I know you're very stat-based.
That's what I know, you see.
Your strokes gained behind the mic is a fairly low quotient. But carry on.
Come on. The question was, who's your main selection?
God, you know, McElroy, Dustin Johnson,
Tommy
Fleetwood,
Brandon Graham. You can only have one.
Thomas Peters. God, how can I pick one of those? Tommy Fleetwood, defending champion. How often does somebody defend? It's pretty rare. And you've gone for Justin, who's playing well every time he goes out there. I love Rory McIlroy. It's his first week back. How ready is he? So, you know...
Come on, get on with it.
Okay. I'm going to go with Thomas Peters.
Okay.
Because I think...
After all that, a name that you didn't mention previously.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Thomas Peters because...
You like these Belgian bombers, don't you? Dietrich last week, Peters this week.
Because I think his need to make the next Ryder Cup side is very good indeed. He's very big indeed. And I think he's just about to get it on again.
Other news now. Patton Kizzire won the Sony Open in Hawaii after coming through a marathon six-hole playoff against fellow American James Hahn. The 31-year-old becomes the first two-time winner on the PGA Tour in the 2017-18 season. He's burst onto the scene in the last couple of years, hasn't he?
Yeah, he showed some Kizzire about 12 months before that. So, yeah, he's obviously a very good player and... Tom Hoagie was winning that for quite a long time.
Yes, he was. He was leading going into the final day.
So there must have been a hoagie bogey at some point.
There was. There was a few hoagie bogeys.
Yeah, but do you know when Tom Hoagie plays at Harbour Town, the Calabogie sound is there. So it could be a hoagie Calabogie bogey. I mean, I see that coming at some point.
We need the top 10, Rob, in the world. How do we stand? Any changes?
No hoagie bogeys in the top 10, but some very good players. Dustin Johnson in at one. Jordan Spieth, the second best player in the world. John Rahm, the third. He's John Rahm the first, but he hasn't got one, two, or three in Roman numerals after name. So John Rahm, third. Justin Thomas, fourth. Hideki Matsuyama, fifth. Justin Rose, sixth. Ricky Fowler, seventh. Brooks Koepka, eighth. Henrik Stenson, 9. Sergio Garcia, 10. No movers, all as they were 7 days before.
Final thoughts on the week to come. We're in Abu Dhabi, of course.
For an Abu Dhabi do.
Indeed. This is where it starts to get serious, isn't it? Rory playing for the first time. this season, DJ coming over to play. I know he's played in Hawaii already, but you start to think about the Masters upcoming and the big events over the course of the year.
Do you know the Masters is the first week in April, and you get into the turn of the year where we are now, first, second week in January, and it feels like it's a long way off. Do you know what?
It's not.
It's really not. It comes at us so fast, and for these top players to have form that they want going into the first major of the year, it's tournaments like this that really get them going. So it promises to be a fantastic week in Abu Dhabi with a stellar field. Rory's back. World number one, Dustin Johnson's there. Justin Rose, super consistent. Henrik Stenson won a couple of points last week in the Eurasia Cup. So it's going to be great. Tommy Fleetwood defending. I could keep running down that list and give you reasons why someone else could win. In fact, I've changed my mind 150 times. I'm sticking with Thomas Peters.
OK, stick with Thomas Peters. Well done. That wraps it up. Join us next week. Well, we'll be looking back at the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA and also previewing the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news from the European Tour via the website, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and I know you're on this one, Rob, Snapchat. And if you've enjoyed the show, please don't forget to rate and review it on iTunes. But for now, from Mr. Robert Lee.
I thought you were going to say match.com there.
Are you on that as well? You're not renewed your subscription. From Robert Lee.
I saw a like from you the other day.
Are we a match?
It's a match made in hell.
From Mr. Robert Lee, it is goodbye.
Yes, it is goodbye. And I've gone for Nacho Elvira as my man outside the top 50 last year, and Thomas Peters.
It is Rose and Campillo. From me, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We'll see you next time.